I'm with John Selborne today on the terrace at the House of Lords, about to have a lovely cup of tea. So the first question is, do we have any mutual friends or acquaintances?
We do indeed. We know the Marshalls together.
The Marshalls.
That's Natalie and
Neil
and their children.
Yes, in fact,
I'm related through Natalie's mother.
And I'm actually Isla's godmother, so yes. Do you drink tea?
To be honest, I am not really a tippler of tea. I usually prefer coffee, but I'm going to make an exception today, and I'm going to have Indian tea with you.
I feel highly honoured. So what's your favourite cup of tea, if it's required for you to drink tea?
Oh, I always have what I call worker's tea, you know, a mug of strong Indian tea. I can't stand the sort of flavoured teas, peppermint teas and things. I avoid those like the plague. And I don't think much of Earl Grey and China tea. So Indian tea, please.
So, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I don't think it's sleeping at all. I think it's got a lot of vibrancy to it, albeit things move very fast. I think you've only got to see how much is going on in an unorthodox way, not necessarily at churches on Sundays, but an awful lot of house meetings, a lot of people attending cathedrals in one capacity or another, and a lot of interest in some of the theological issues of the day at various levels, sometimes in the media, sometimes in informal discussion groups. And I give credit to the established church for having taken a quite relaxed view about how people approach their religion and how they wish to address these issues. So I don't agree that there's anything sleepy about it.
Mm.
I think I'm rather proud to be a member.
So I'm interested that you talked about Sundays and the church not necessarily being about Sundays at the moment, because what we're finding in our parishes is that our non-Sunday attendances are higher than our Sunday attendances, which is on kind of the last year was the first year that kind of happened.
Well, I find that we've got a lively church at home. I should explain first of all that my church is called St. Matthew's, Blackmore and White Hill, which is in the Diocese of Portsmouth. We're very lucky. We've got a very lively a priest in charge, and we're also responsible, he is also responsible for seeding a new church next door in what is effectively a new town, and so some of the congregation, I certainly won't be one of them, are meant to be transferred into the new community. And he sets about it in quite an interesting way. You know, he has all sorts of discussion groups, parties, mums with children, all sorts of things which are of non-traditional nature, and rather avoids the formal church services, which he thinks will be a bit of a turn-off to some of these non-traditional attendants. So I'm one of the traditionalists left behind. I'm afraid, age 78, I'm too old to change my spots. I like old-fashioned services, I have to admit. I love evensong. One of the things I'm rather impressed by is how, in our parish church, we do have evensong once a month with a full choir, wonderful choir master, and I think to a very high standard. So people who come to that, again, are people who won't go to any other church service, or some of them, rather. And again, one's got to realise that not everyone can attend or is prepared to attend whatever's on offer. They pick and choose.
We have Evensong in three of our five worship centres, and in one of them it's very well attended. In our smallest parish church, it's very well attended, and in our biggest church building, it's very poorly attended. And in our tiny, tiny church building, which is actually a pilgrim's chapel, which has been restored, it's reasonably well attended. What do you think are the current moral imperatives for environmental conservation?
I'm a farmer, and I think very firmly that it's the duty of every generation, like every farmer, to leave planet, like a farm, in a better condition than when you found it. So in other words, every generation we should be reducing our footprint, and of course we're not doing that at the moment. We know the implications of climate change, we know the appalling implications of waste. I mean, plastic in the marine environment is very much in the news at the moment, but quite frankly there's many other issues in the marine environment, like ocean acidification. And we need a circular economy where we don't just make something, use it and throw it away. We have to recycle and build up businesses so that we stop demanding more and more raw materials in order to improve our standard of living. So those are the moral imperatives. It's very much to reduce our impact, to increase the amount of biodiversity which can flourish, enhance biodiversity, reduce impacts on the environment, whether soil, air or water. And I think this is come up the agenda rapidly over the last 10 years. The younger generation take it very seriously. I've been involved in banging on about this for many years. I chaired a quango called the Joint Nature Conservation Committee one time, which was mainly about trying to conserve biodiversity. And that would have been 20 years ago, when it was, you know, at the time of the first Earth Summit at Rio de Janeiro, 1994. And that possibly was the moment when, it was just after the Iron Curtain had come down, that was just possibly the moment the politicians began to take it seriously. Gorbachev, even he took eventually to it, which was quite funny because on his watch the Aral Sea almost dried up. So I think now we've got the younger generation understanding the implications of what happens if we foul our nest, if we don't protect ecosystem services, if we allow our water to be polluted, if we allow the air to be polluted. We will have economic migrants, we'll have starvation, and we will have a loss of biodiversity, which in turn will lead to a loss of sustainability for all species, not least human.
Next question is, of all the cathedrals you have visited on your pilgrimage so far, which are your favourites?
Well, I'm going to pull you up, first of all. Ooh. I don't really describe my walks as pilgrimages as such.
Oh, it was reported as a pilgrimage.
It was more a walk to cathedrals, because I think I'd be misleading you if I was saying I was doing it out of a wish to fulfil the role of a pilgrim.
Okay.
What I was doing was I was walking to a destination which I was very interested in to see, and if walking to a cathedral is a pilgrimage, well then it was a pilgrimage. But I think to call myself a pilgrim would be to claim false credentials. But yes, I've walked to all 42 cathedrals in England, the Anglican cathedrals. Which were the ones I most admired? I've been asked this many times, and I think I probably have to answer, I put Durham somewhere at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. It is, after all, one of the original Norman cathedrals, with wonderful interior, with those great pillars which would have been coloured when originally built. Now, of course, the colours are faded, but wonderful patterns. I think I would also put Wells Cathedral very high, probably equal first or second, and that's got that remarkable bracing system inside, which wasn't, of course, originally intended. And I think I probably would put Exeter ahead of Salisbury and Winchester as number three. The reason, perhaps, that I put Exeter so high is it was my last cathedral. I ended there at Easter Day this year with all the family. It's a very impressive nave, and I love the ambiance, all the buildings around outside. I didn't know Exeter at all well. I knew Bath better. I knew Wells better,
So I was ordained in Wells, so it has a kind of special place in my heart.
Well, there's a lovely, lovely features to the precincts. Mm-hmm. What's the name of that road at this, which goes from the north side of the cathedral? A street, you know, with medieval street.
Oh yes, it's the it's the house where all the
there's several houses, either side.
The Clarks live.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Where they,
That's a lovely addition.
I can't remember the name, but it's where all the it's where the people paid for the choirs live still.
Exactly. Yes, I'm sure they do. Well, it's perfect. It's just so unexpected. And then, of course, there's that green space. I tell you another thing which I rather admired about Wells Cathedral, and that was the refectory, which was, again, rather good.
The chapter house in Wells is quite interesting because it's octagonal. It's quite an interesting shape.
You know, all the different parishes, I think they are labelled in the chapter.
They're the prebendaries, they're the seats for the prebends.
Well, there were more than that. One of them was Henstridge, which is in Somerset, and that was the village where I was born on Easter Day 1940. And that was, of course, an accident birth, because my mother and father were living in Hampshire, but there was a war on, and my father was doing army exercises on Salisbury Plain, and so my mother, knowing she was about to give birth, rented a house next door to the church at Henstridge, and I was born on Easter Day in 1940.
Gosh, yes.
So I was pleased to see one of the labels of the do you call them the prebendaries?
Yes.
Was indeed Henstridge. It gets a mention there. So I got a photograph of myself standing in front of it.
So, the third question, and which is one which has been hotly debated over the past few months, is what would you say are the main functions of the House of Lords in the UK today?
Well, the role of a second chamber is to give the opportunity. First and foremost, it's got about three functions, I would say, but the first and foremost, the function is to encourage the House of Commons to think again where we think it is necessary, not to insist on its way, but to allow further thought, particularly where an issue exceeds the brief given at a general election. But secondly, and this is the area which I've been involved in very much, the select committees look in great detail at areas where legislation, regulation, international treaties, social services initiatives, and other legislation might be needed in the short, medium, or long term, and produce reports as a result of written and oral evidence. And we usually take much longer than the equivalent select committees in the House of Commons, giving an opportunity, even if we don't believe that our reports have got it right. You can at least refer to all the evidence online. Anyone can see it, and anyone can watch on the website meetings of the committees. I used to chair until the general election the Science and Technology Committee, just to give you a flavour as to what we used to get up to. Take an issue, for example, of genetic modification. Well, we know all about the controversy about genetically modified food. But at the time when the Zika virus became quite a hot issue and spread by a certain type of mosquito, one of the ways to control it, other than using enormous quantities of chemicals, which in themselves are polluting and which don't ultimately work because they build up resistance, is to genetically modify the male mosquito, let them out in large quantities, and because the female only mates once, you get a 90% collapse in the population. So you do that twice and you get the population of mosquitoes down to a vanishingly small proportion. And that's sort of an issue which, on the face of it, people are alarmed at the idea of releasing genetically modified organisms into the environment. But nevertheless, it's an issue. It's a risk assessment issue with obviously some strong ethical issues. Are you releasing genetically modified organisms which might leak into other life forms? Nanotechnology would be another issue where we've looked at the implications of going to very small scale organisms and rebuilding. Ice cream, for example, which is non-fattening, might well in future be made using some nanotechnology skills. But that involves using minerals which are so small that they can get through the membrane of the brain. And that in itself would not necessarily be very desirable, although consuming less fat probably would be. So these are some of the issues where we were looking at the implications of new technologies and saying, well, is there something we have to anticipate in terms of legislation? And it's detailed stuff. It's not sort of going to capture the headlines, but I think it's a good role for the second chamber. And the third role, I mentioned first of all giving the Commons an opportunity to think again, but not insisting ultimately that it has its right of way. And secondly, these detailed reports and detailed scrutiny of issues of great relevance. And that incidentally includes European legislation and international treaties. But the third is to give an opportunity for debates on wider issues so that the public can again make a contribution and follow the debates which are held. You'll get well-informed debates in the Lords because people, there's always an expert on something in the Lords, and after all, most of the members are not politicians, but they come from all backgrounds. And so you get some interesting and well-informed debates, which sometimes help opinion form. So I think those are the three functions of the Lords, and I would argue very strongly that you don't have to have a House of Lords, but you do need a second chamber. And it doesn't matter to me whether it's appointed or elected. You will benefit by having a chamber which isn't all politics.
Very interesting. The last and slightly frivolous question is, what is your favourite thing which begins with T?
Tom is my grandson.
There have been a few of those, a few Toms and Thomases in the
response. But I've got to be careful here that I'm not favouring Tom over all my other seven grandchildren.
Do any of the others begin with T?
Yes, one is called Ted. Whoops.
So, should we conclude that Tom and Ted are your favourite things beginning with T?
Please do, yes, please do. Otherwise, Ted, who's aged four, will never forgive me.
I need to say thank you very much for having me here for tea today, Lord Selborne.
Well, a great pleasure. And give my very best wishes to the Marshals when you next see them. I suspect you'll see them before I will.
I hope so. I hope we'll see them really soon. Thank you.